Signs. Ms. Kim.
May it please the court, my name is Helen Kim and I represent the appellant in this case, Joshua Hines. The key dispute in this case was never about the weight or quantity. It was about the type of substances involved. And the district court committed clear error when it sentenced Mr. Hines as if he was only involved in crack cocaine or cocaine base, when the evidence clearly showed that he also was responsible for dealing in powder cocaine. In this case, the district court took
Has any issue ever been made about the whether a gram of powder weighs the same as a gram of coke, whether it makes a difference or what? Has that ever?
Judge, the issues from Kimbrough were never raised in this case because Mr. Hines was never trying
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about weight.
It's the abstract. The question is not pointed in your case. It's just pointed in general. Is there a difference
between a gram of crack cocaine and powder cocaine?
Does it take more than a gram of powder to produce a gram of crack?
Yes. Yes, and in this case in particular, there was a big difference in the guidelines in that if Mr. Hines was held...
We're just talking about weight. If you cook a gram of powder in order to make crack, does the crack you get from your cooking, does it weigh more, less, the same as the powder?
I believe it would depend on whether there's mixtures...
Just if you just took it straight. You know, if you don't know,
I don't know the answer to that.
Is it the mixture that counts or the weight of the cocaine itself? I mean, suppose, you add sodium or something to the powder to make the crack. And as a result, the weight of the crack is the powder now in its, crystallized form plus the sodium and whatever else was used to make it. Is it the mixture that you weigh? Is it mixture containing? Is that what the statute says? Or is it the actual evil substance?
841 does deal with whether or not there's a mixture containing cocaine base or a mixture containing cocaine. They separate the two, and certainly there's a mandatory minimum that's involved when it's dealing with a certain amount of cocaine base. In this case, there's nothing that suggests that there was any insinuation that when Mr. Hines was doing distributions, he was mixing, in that sense, the crack with the powder. Rather, on two instances, specifically the counts of indictment, we know that he distributed cocaine base. We also, though, know, because it was undisputed in the government...
No, that's your argument. I'm just curious about this point. When deciding on a sentence for crack, is the weight based on the cocaine in the crack or on the entire crack?
Mixture.
The mix does make. Okay, thank you.
And I'm sorry, I didn't understand that specific question.
No, okay, so you'd go back to your argument.
So when Mr. Hines admitted in his plea that he did distribute cocaine base, he admitted to a total of 73.5 grams. Of cocaine base. That would have correlated with a level 30 under the guidelines. When the judge was looking at the issue of relevant conduct in particular, he took perhaps a conservative approach when it came to looking at the statements that were made by Mr. Hines post-arrest. But he took a very radical approach when it came to deciding to count everything as crack cocaine rather than powder cocaine. The government had the burden of proof, especially in light of the fact that it stated unequivocally that Individual A, the confidential informant, had stated during debriefings that he received powder cocaine from Mr. Hines and he also received crack cocaine from Mr. Hines. To not have the government show how to either extrapolate which amounts in relevant conduct should be counted as powder versus crack, the district court should have then counted everything as powder cocaine. When we argued that the court's issue was really about the substance, repeatedly what was brought to the court's attention was the fact that this had enormous consequences to the guideline range that Mr. Hines would be looking at. What was originally going to be a range of 87 to 108 months, that's including relevant conduct, at 4.5 times, 2 times a week for approximately 6 months, including that, would have been his guideline range.
The plea agreement acknowledged that relevant conduct he agreed to I forgot what you said.
73.5 grams of crack cocaine.
But did the plea agreement also acknowledge that the relevant conduct might have some impact on the ultimate sentence?
That's true. And we're not asking, nor were we asking at the time of sentencing, that relevant conduct not be counted. We were asking that the amounts that were crack cocaine be counted as crack cocaine, and any amounts that were powder
Well, how would that be determined? I mean, how would an estimate be made?
That estimate would have been the responsibility, we believe, of the government.
But how would it be made? How do you do it?
I believe that...
I'm worried about your position creating a tremendous loophole where anyone in the crack business, you know, buys powder, and then he says, well, you know... I bought powder, I made some of it into crack, I don't know how much, the rest I sold as powder. Where does that leave the government? Do they have to treat it all as powder? Is that your proposition?
The question shouldn't be where it leaves the government if they're unable to meet their burden. The question has to be
court do? I'm worried about the wise guy who, he's in the crack business, but he buys it in powder form and cooks it. And then he says, of course I bought powder and I make crack, but I also sell powder. So.
How much the government put in, didn't they?
Pardon?
The government put that portion of it in.
The government did, in fact, in their version of the offense.
He sold both powder and crack.
That's correct. In their version of the offense is where
that came in. How would the government estimate how much crack he sold?
Even if they took that statement from Individual A, and then they chose not to, and they specifically said that we are choosing not to put Individual A on as a witness, and instead we are choosing to go simply by Mr. Hines' admitted statements. That choice, once again, left the court in a position where even Individual A, who claimed that he received both powder and crack, wasn't now giving an estimate. Again, we're not quarreling
with... Was there a figure given then by the government based on...
No. There was none, and
it was just your client's statement.
No, again, it was that the government put in their their version of the offense that Individual A had stated during debriefings that he received powder / crack cocaine, and that's how that became an issue in the case. And what the government took as a position at the time of sentencing was that the court should disregard any statements regarding powder and should count everything as crack cocaine. And that's what the district court did without giving much explanation for why it was choosing to go that route when, in fact, it was making a significant difference to Mr. Hines'
sentence. Now, if we order, if we remand for resentencing, can the government then put on, you know, consumers to say they bought crack from your client?
I believe that... The government can. I don't believe there's an obligation for them to do that. I believe they can.
Well, they have to in order to prove that how much of how much crack he sold, right? They'd have to.
If they want to retain the position that all of the relevant conduct should be counted as crack
cocaine.
You have
to count it all as powder.
Or, once again, we are looking at some guideline range differences with at the bottom, though, a mandatory minimum. Mr. Hines was always looking at a mandatory minimum of 120 months. Again, we were talking about a difference between a range that put him under that floor.
If you got powder.
or even a combination of powder. At the sentencing hearing, we had argued that even if the district court took the higher numbers when it came to the frequency, but again counted that as powder, he would still be at a level 32 rather than a level 36. Again, we're dealing with big differences when it came to the guideline range that he was looking at, and ultimately the guideline range, as we know in this case, is where the district court sentenced Mr. Hines at the low end. We were seeking a sentence of 120 months. I see my time.
Thank you, Ms. Kim.
Thank you.
Mr. Kness?
May it please the Court, my name is John Ness, and I represent the United States. Your Honors, the district court did not clearly err in finding that the defendant for sentencing...
Well, you know, you have a really tough row to hoe, because there's no evidence that he cooked all the powder into crack and sold it, right?
I disagree, Your Honor, and let me explain why.
Well, I thought your witness said that he bought both powder and crack.
Well, I'm glad you raised that point, Judge Bauer, because...
I'm glad, too, but go ahead and tell me about it.
Happiness reigns.
Individual A was not counted for sentencing purposes. That is absolutely clear from the record. The pre-sentence report says that. It says the transactions with Individual A did not count for sentencing.
So did you think all other transactions were entirely crack?
What we have in the record, yes, Your Honor. What we have in the record is that the defendant gave a post-arrest statement,
right,
consensually, to DEA agents, and he was asked to describe his, quote, current source of supply for cocaine. He responded that he bought cocaine in amounts ranging from 4.5 to 9 ounces at a time from an Aurora Latin King gang member named Omar. And he did that twice a month, mm-hmm, for 6 months to a year. He was then asked, quote, who was cooking the cocaine into crack cocaine that Hines was selling? Hines, the defendant. Defendant responded that he, quote, cooked the cocaine into crack cocaine himself. There's no mention of powder in that
he
at all.
He being the speaker, not the defendant.
The speaker was the defendant at that point. The report...
I thought we were talking about the informant who purchased the cocaine.
No, no, Your Honor. The defendant, the informant, Individual A...
Yeah, Individual A said what?
He said at some point that he bought powder and or crack from,
right,
the defendant. But that did not count for the drug amount, for the relevant drug quantity at sentencing.
That's true. But it suggests that he's in a dual business, right? He sells powder and he sells coke.
Well,
so you can infer from the amount of powder that he buys that it's all coke. Right?
There was nothing to substantiate what Individual A said because the government chose not to rely on Individual A.
He chose not to rely.
Well, Ms. Kim indicated that she didn't believe that you took your argument from the defendant's own words. But you're saying that you did? When I asked her that, what were you relying on? Were they relying?
We are relying primarily on the defendant's post-arrest admissions. In which
primarily, but was there anything other than that if you're relying on?
Yes, there was, Your Honor. There were at least three other sets of facts. One is that the defendant pleaded guilty to two counts involving crack, not powder, not anything else but crack. Second, there were defendant's admissions and recorded phone calls where he made statements that referred to cooking powder into crack.
We know that, of course. We know that he's in the crack business. The question is, but from Individual A, he seems also to be in the powder business.
There is nothing.
Sells powder, sells crack, right?
There is nothing, Your Honor, to substantiate what Individual A said with respect
to
that.
What difference does it make whether it's substantiate? It's evidence, right?
For this sentencing, it was not, Your Honor, because it was not counted in the drug relevant drug quantity.
When you talked to Judge Norgal, did you say basically what you just told us? It's from his post-DEA statements?
That's what the record reflects, Your Honor.
The prosecution told Judge Norgal.
Exactly. The prosecution told Judge Norgal that first we have to look at his post-arrest statements. That was the primary evidence for the drug amount and type. And the government said we are choosing not to call Individual A at this time because he's a confidential informant. Now, individual A, there's no proof in the record at all. There was no evidence, nothing to substantiate anything relating to powder other than what individual A said that we had no proof was true. So that's why we chose not to call him.
I don't understand how you're not having proof and you're not wanting to call a witness eliminates the evidence. I don't understand. Are you saying that this person, that you believe Hines never sells powder, he just sells coke? Is that your contention?
The record doesn't show that.
Answer my question directly. Is that your contention?
For purposes of this sentencing?
No, please, just tell me. Does Hines, do you believe that Hines sells powder and coke or just coke?
I don't know, Your Honor.
That's the answer. You don't know.
I don't know.
If you don't know, then you can't infer the amount of coke he sells from the amount of powder that he buys.
Was Hines the witness A, that you didn't call, was his statement before the sentencing judge when he sentenced?
His statement was in the pre-sentence report. Yes, Your Honor.
That was the question. So what you elected to bring in trial has not much to do with the sentencing report is what he considered when he sentenced, was it not?
What the sentencing report said.
Wait.
Yes, sir.
When he sentenced them, he was using the sentencing report as a predicate for the sentence, was he not?
Yes, sir.
And included in that was the statements made by witness A.
That statement was included, Your Honor. But then in the pre-sentence report, it explicitly said that those amounts were not counted for purposes of the relevant count.
You're missing the point. The point is whether this person is engaged in the sale. It sells powder as well as crack, and that material that Judge Bauer was mentioning in the pre-sentence report is relevant to that. And the judge is permitted to consider it.
Your Honor, I'm not saying that it's not relevant. What I'm saying is that it's not controlling here for purposes of the sentencing.
You didn't use it for counting purposes.
Correct, Your Honor.
Right. What does that have to do with it?
Respectfully, what it has to do with the sentencing, Your Honors, is that when we're trying to craft a reasonable estimate, which is the standard of the drug amount, and then talking about the drug type, we have a certain amount of evidence that we have to look at for what that drug was. He was asked, he could have had several different drug businesses he was engaged in, but for purposes of this case, he was engaged in crack, and that's all he was sentenced on was crack. He was asked.
No, the question is how you infer the amount of crack. That's the critical question.
And I recognize that, Your Honor. And the statements that he made,
they're consistent with his just being the crack business, but they don't show it. And the individual A business in the pre-sentence report tugs the other way. Did the judge weigh all these things and? Did he mention individual A?
He mentioned individual A by inference, Your Honor, in adopting the PSR, which included that statement.
I'm not happy with that by inference. This is very, very slick.
The DEA post-arrest statement, did it include, he was making cooking crack, did it include an estimate of weights?
It included an estimate of weights, and that he said that he was buying amounts ranging from 4.5 ounces to 9 ounces every 2 weeks.
That's the powder.
Correct. And then he was asked, who was cooking that into the crack cocaine that he was selling? He said, I'm cooking it into crack cocaine.
How do you go from the weight of powder to weight of crack when you don't actually have the powder, the crack?
I'm sorry, Your Honor,
His sentence depends on the weight of crack, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, all you have is the powder. So how do you go from the weight of the powder to the weight of the crack? You must have some formula for that.
It was a 1-to-1 conversion ratio,
I
believe.
Is that accurate? What's the basis for that?
It would be at least 1-to-1 because, as we know, you have to have some extra agent, whether it's baking soda or something else like that, to convert the cocaine powder, the hydrochloride, into crack. So it was always at least a 1-to-1
That isn't true. Because according to the U.S. Sentencing Commission, which I imagine you recognize as some kind of authority, under ideal condition, now that's obviously a significant qualification, the finished crack is 11% lighter than the powder.
What is important, though, also, Your Honor, is...
Were you aware of that?
I personally was not aware of that, Your Honor.
Well, that could be significant, right? When you don't have the crack. Now, it's unlikely that he has ideal conditions. It's unlikely. But again, if he had that 11%, would be critical in this case.
It would be especially critical if the defendant had raised that as an issue. But the defendant only raised as an issue the basis for counting all of this as crack, as opposed to crack and or powder. Respectfully, Your Honor, I think that there was sufficient evidence that this
he gave the amount of powder that he purchased and then said he cooked it. It was cooked into crack, and who cooked it? I did, or something to that effect.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So there was no variation. The powder was bought, and in that conversation, it was cooked into crack.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Except for individual A.
Correct. Who's,
it wasn't cooked for him.
Whose purchases were not counted for...
powder. Maybe there are other purchasers like that.
And it also bears emphasis, this is a very low-end range that the district court selected. There was, if the district court had chosen to take a non...
I don't know what that has to do with anything. It's the low end of a range premised on the assumption that all of the powder was cooked into crack.
Yes, Your Honor, based on...
Different range, right, if the powder wasn't cooked into crack.
Yes, Your Honor, but this was, again, based on the defendant's admission.
But it's based on a one-to-one.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Kness. So, Ms. Kim, your time expired, but if you want a minute, if you have something further.
Thank you, Judge. I would just respond to one thing, which is that the government repeatedly says that the PSR stated that anything said by individual A would not be counted. I disagree, and I believe that the logic is that Mr. Hines made a post-arrest statement. This was in November of 2008. When he made the statement as to the quantities of drugs that he was dealing with, it is illogical to think that he was excluding from those amounts quantities or times that he had dealt with individual A. So for the government...
Well, was the question put to him, how much cocaine have you purchased altogether, or how was it phrased?
The report doesn't show exactly how it was asked. What the report shows is that Mr. Hines gave an estimate of what he had purchased over a period of time, and then it jumps to a question which is specifically related to who does the cooking, and Mr. Hines related that he did, implying no one else did.
That's it.
And that's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kim, and we thank you and the defenders for your...